Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
This is the comprehensive Florida Farm Bill, which can be described as two categories, technical and policy changes. For the policy changes, the bill removes any additive to a public water system in Florida that does not relate to water purity. The bill requires transparent and accurate labeling for meat, milk, poultry, and egg products. It makes it a crime to fly drones over green-belted farmland, and a new misdemeanor for harassing anybody on public or private property with drones.
Well, that doesn't seem very controversial. Just making sure that water doesn't have any additives in it and making sure that, you know, meat and eggs and milk are properly labeled and preventing drones from harassing people and flying over farms. I mean, that all seems, you know, fine, doesn't it?
Moving over to fluoride, what are we doing with fluoride in the bill?
I thought you'd never ask. So what we have done, and we've gotten a lot of conversation around this piece because of fluoride being in the news and in politics and the conversation. This bill doesn't specifically say fluoride. What we're saying is a health additive. So we define a health additive as anything that doesn't meet the primary or secondary water quality or anything that doesn't improve the water quality. And we're saying you cannot do it. So anything that isn't related to water quality is prohibited.
So will this lead to fluoride being removed from water sources across the state of Florida?
Yes, it will.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely, yeah. You know, I like Kaylee Tuck. Kaylee Tuck is a good representative. She's a solid conservative. She's a decent woman. And Anna Eskamani is, I mean, also, I think, a decent woman and a good representative, you know, on two completely opposite sides of the political spectrum. You know, Kayla's a good conservative and Anna's a good Democrat, a good liberal, okay? But, you know, asking the question, well, does this ban fluoride? Well, I mean, not by name, but it'll eliminate fluoride from the water. Oh, yeah. Most definitely, right?
The only thing we're requiring local governments to do is remove health additives from their water supply right now. But I will say there have been a couple of counties, cities who have removed the fluoride from their water system, and they've seen about $1 million savings over 5 years. That's their projection. So when it comes to the fiscal, we believe we're saving local governments money.
Yeah, one of the questions about this, aside from, I mean, there's basically, I guess you'd say there's three issues here. Issue number one is, does fluoride provide more benefit than it provides risk of harm? Right? I mean, that's the basic question. Number two, if it does provide more, and of course, the benefit is in terms of preventing cavities, particularly for poor kids. Right? That's the primary benefit, is kids who don't brush their teeth, kids who don't maybe even have the ability to buy toothpaste, kids who don't see dentists on the regular, you know, those are the kids we're the most worried about. Okay, and they're going to get more cavities if you take out the fluoride, is the health claim. Okay, and you know, many decades of evidence seem to bear that out. It's done a pretty good job of reducing cavities by somewhere on the order of 20-25%, something like that. But of course, the consequence is that fluoride also carries a health risk. As some of the more recent literature indicates, and as the Surgeon General for the state of Florida indicates, it carries a risk to your health. And you also have questions about what is the dosage, since there's no regulation on the amount total of fluoride you put in your body. It's the percentage of the water, or the, it's not even percent, it's per millage of the water. Not even that, because that's thousands, it's per millionthage. I don't know what the word is. But, you know, it's a very, very small concentration. But the point is that it doesn't tell you how much you get. You just, you know, if you drink a lot of water, you get a lot of fluoride or more fluoride. And if you drink very little or no water, you get, you know, no fluoride. I mean, if a kid's drinking soda all day, they don't get fluoride, right? I mean, they're not ingesting the water that carries it into their body. So it's very hard to figure out exactly what is the appropriate amount for any individual. It's not regulated in that way. It doesn't look like a medical application precisely because of that problem. Some area that might have very high natural fluoride, and then you drink a lot of water, could that be harmful? Well, that's the concern, okay? So, you know, net benefit, net cost. That's the issue health-wise. Number two issue is, okay, let's say it's a net health benefit. I believe it's a net health benefit. I think the legislature even said, you know, that's not in dispute, it's a net health benefit. But that's not the issue. The issue is, can you mandate that people take it? philosophically, can you mandate that the water people don't have really the freedom to opt out of, and certainly did not give their consent to opt into, carries a medicine that doesn't have anything to do with water quality itself? And that's a political, philosophical, moral argument. It's pretty compelling because we believe in medical freedom. We believe that people, you know, shouldn't be forced, coerced, or through lack of real options, you know, and mandated to put something into their bodies that at least some of them do not want. Now, if everybody wanted fluoride, it wouldn't be a problem. But of course, some people do not want fluoride. Perhaps for good reason, perhaps for bad reason, but that's not the issue. Medical consent is medical consent. You don't have to be reasonable. You don't have to give your justification to the doctor why you don't want to take a pill. You just don't take the pill. And they can't make you take the pill most of the time. Okay? So that's the issue. And then, of course, the third one that Kayla is addressing that had been asked of her is, what's the cost? Well, actually, from a cost perspective, it saves money. You don't have to buy fluoride. I asked ECUA yesterday, and they said that it's about $340,000 a year total savings if they don't have to fluoridate the water. That would be immediately applied to the cost of adding more granular activated carbon to filter water better. That's a very expensive part of the process, into the millions. So, you know, a third of $1 million isn't going to do a lot, but it's something. And so, you know, wells would be more safe from PFAS, which we know is a harm, or at least a harm risk. So back to the actual discussion in the Florida legislature. Anna Escamani is proposing an amendment. The amendment would be to take fluoride off the prohibited list, to specifically allow fluoride to be in the water, which, of course, is now this. You have to understand, this is not a fluoride bill. It's an agriculture bill. And it has provisions about labeling of food. It has provisions about, you know, drones over farms. And it has provisions about additives to the water. But she wants to amend the bill and take out the fluoride part.
This amendment that I filed early this morning essentially carves out from the bill the preemption of fluoride in our water systems. As all know, local governments have the ability to make decisions on this, and some have made the decision to remove fluoride from their municipal water systems. But there's a huge concern from the public health community, from the dentist community, that removing fluoride would have serious consequences, including higher healthcare costs. Treating cavities and related infections is expensive, and fluoridation has saved families and taxpayers millions in dental care each year, worsening health disparities, knowing that vulnerable populations would suffer the most as they often have less access to regular dental care.
I mean, all of that is fair. You're going to have kids get cavities. Cavities cause pain. Pain means you either do or do not go to the dentist, which you can or cannot afford. I mean, typically poor people, you know, have more access to free health care. So maybe that makes up a little bit. But, you know, that's your choice. That's the balancing act. Do you mandate a medicine on the population through fluoridating the water, which then prevents cavities and cost and pain? If you want to pit the one issue against the other, those are your basic issues, right? And the state legislature is, the Republican state legislature is about ready to say, we're going to choose the philosophical argument over the practical consequence.
Removing fluoride also ignores basic scientific concerns. As I mentioned, organizations like the American Dental Association and others support water fluoridation as safe and effective. The CDC once even named it one of the 10 greatest public health achievements of the 20th century. And I do think that this decision is preemptive, and we should let locals decide. And when locals decide, you can see the outcry from their constituents around this topic.
Well, and I don't think there's a consistent answer. Some communities are going to ban it. Some communities are going to continue to allow it. Which, that's basically what Anna Escamani is saying, is that we shouldn't force the whole state to go one way or the other. Right now, they can choose what they want to do. They're not required to have it. They're not prohibited from having it. Leave it that way. De-preempt it. Preemption means that the state controls. She's a Democrat arguing for de-preemption. It's kind of an interesting case, okay? Because typically it's Republicans, conservatives, who argue for, you know, local control. But she says, we should allow the locals to decide on a, you know, county-by-county basis. I think it's most likely that Escambia County would vote to remove it, although I don't think it's definitive that they would. There's been some pretty robust discussion about this at the ECUA board. Kaylee Tuck, who is running the bill, says...
Is there debate on the amendment? Representative Tuck, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And members, while this is a very friendly member, this is an unfriendly amendment. I ask you to vote down.
Members, additional debate. Representative Skidmore.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, there is nothing friendly about cavities. nothing friendly about cavities. Believe me, you don't want to do this statewide. You don't want to make this decision for every single person in the state. You want to leave control at the local level, and you want to vote up on this very good amendment.
And, of course, the response by the people who oppose fluoride is going to be that even if you control it at the local level, which is better than controlling it by the state, you still have one group of people, the majority, telling the minority, let's say, the smaller number of people, that they have to have fluoride in their water. And, I mean, again, that's the philosophical argument. Anna Eskamani spent a lot more time talking about the, you know, the responding to the contrary arguments, responding and defending, basically, the value of fluoride as, you know, it's something that the CDC has endorsed. Of course, we have a lot of dentists who believe this is a good thing, even though that kind of runs contrary to their own personal interest, if you want to say it that way, because, you know, more cavities mean more money for them. And they're all like, yeah, but we'd rather have the kids be safe, right? Which is kind of what you want from doctors. You want people who would rather have fewer problems and want the health of their patients. So it comes down to the conversation. Daryl Campbell, who is a, Danny Alvarez, who is the Republican who kind of spoke towards the end, basically says, look, it's not about whether fluoride is good or bad. It's about whether governments can force you or not.
The proposition I present to you members is, does the government have the right by a mere simple majority vote to put medicines and drugs and chemicals into your body that you did not consent to?
Because you would be horrified to go to the doctor and the doctor says, you have to take this medicine. And you say, well, I don't agree with your judgment. I don't want to take that medicine. I'm not going to take that medicine. And they said, it doesn't matter whether you want to or not. You're going to have to take it. And we just went through a pandemic in which there was a lot of fighting over that particular issue. Now, fighting over the vaccine is different over fighting over fluoride. Fluoride has a long and pretty well-established track record. The vaccines were much more novel. They were much more uncertain. They're still arguing over the vaccine. But generally speaking, in Florida, we have now settled on the view, generally, not everybody agrees, that mandating a novel vaccine was a mistake. Doesn't mean the vaccine itself was bad, but forcing people to take medicine that they don't want to take, that's the problem.
It's no conspiracy to believe that I am in control of my children. It's no conspiracy to believe that I am in control of what medicines I take. I get asked that question every time I go to the doctor. Do you consent? I do. I don't. But when I turn on my tap, that question never gets asked of me.
That's right. You don't have a consent in for fluoride in your home. That's the issue. So they voted on it. It passed overwhelmingly. This is the entire agriculture bill, again, with the food labeling restrictions. We'll talk about that next hour because those are interesting. Amazing, frankly. But that's for next hour. The fluoride ban or the all additives ban that's not there to improve water quality, and the drones and all the other stuff that was in, you know, 111-page bill. It's a massive bill, and it passed 88 to 27. So that's just the House, the Senate, the governor. You know, I'm trying to remember now. I think, did the Senate pass this already? All of a sudden, I feel unsure. I think maybe the Senate did pass it already. I'm not sure if their bill's the same. I'll have to check into that. Sorry, I can't tell you at the moment. I expect them both to pass it. I expect the governor to sign it. At this point, it seems almost certain that the governor is going to sign a bill that will prohibit fluoride in the water in the state of Florida for everybody, and that'll probably take effect. I didn't check the date on this one, but usually they take effect like July 1st or something like that, June 1st, something like that. So most likely that's going to be the end of the conversation until somebody sues. Because, you know, all meaningful legislation draws lawsuits, and somebody's going to sue, probably, you know, class action on behalf of poor kids would be my expectation. And we'll see what happens with that. 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Why'd I go to the doctor? One day at the firehouse, I was so lightheaded I could barely stand. Even my crew noticed. Getting checked out was the right call. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Listen, Blue Horseshoe loves Blue Star Airlines. Got it?
Got it.
Right.
You know, John, sometimes I feel really dumb for missing something kind of obvious.
Why would you say that?
Well, no, because I never want to put inaccurate information out. So I always side, you know, like the default is side with uncertainty, side with don't say a thing that's false, right? And I was talking about, you know, I don't know if this has passed the Senate yet, this agriculture bill. Right? Mm-hmm. It was literally the Senate bill that the House was voting on, which I know that because it was SB 700. So, yes, it has overwhelmingly passed the Senate first by the supermajority that the Republicans control, and it has now passed the House. And so this is going to the governor's desk. So, yeah, the fluoride ban and the drone ban and farms and all that kind of stuff. The one thing about the food labeling, we didn't get into that. Like I said, we'll talk about it next hour. The food labeling restrictions, that does not take effect until I think it's 11 out of 14 southeastern states all also pass a similar prohibition on mislabeling food. And so that one won't matter just yet, but, you know, eventually it might. All right, 526 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning, gentlemen. Ukraine and the U.S. have signed an agreement to give the U.S. access to Ukraine's rare earth minerals. The Trump administration says that deal will also address the $175 billion in aid that the U.S. has given Ukraine since the start of the war with Russia. President Trump's global tariffs may mean fewer toys under the Christmas tree this year. The CEO of the Toy Association telling the New York Times this week that because of the tariffs, the industry is facing a frozen supply chain that may put Christmas at risk. Yesterday, President Trump appeared to acknowledge that there could be a toy shortage. And
What was his answer? They might have fewer toys, but there'll be better toys or something like that. Just okay. Meanwhile, did you catch the thing where he's saying that the economic downturn, the negative growth in the first quarter, the stock market, that's all Biden's fault?
I did not see those
comments. No.
I mean, it sounds like something he'd say.
Yeah, just the reality denying is par for the course, right? Look, you can believe long term this is going to be good. You can believe that he's fixing real problems that will not manifest as massive problems until later. But you can't blame Biden for the effect of the tariffs. Or you can. I mean, you're the president. You can say whatever you want. Sorry. Go ahead, David.
No, that is all right. That seems like something that happens with every administration the last 20 years, though. It's everybody. Well, it's always the guy before me.
If it's good, it's me. Yeah. If it's bad, it was them. Yeah,
exactly.
Of course. Right.
Some news out of North Carolina. 4 people have died after a dump truck drove into a utility crew that was working on a power line there. Their state highway patrol says 66-year-old Michael Ray Vernon was charged with 4 counts of death by motor vehicle after that crash. That's what we've got for right now.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. You know, I was actually thinking about that, John, that, you know, the comment from the president that this is Biden's fault. This is Biden's economy. He's the one, you know, who did all this to you. And what I was really thinking is, the super always Trumpers, you know, the super pro Trumpers who always get angry at me every time I criticize the president. You're secretly a liberal, you're a rhino, and all this kind of nonsense. I mean, I genuinely don't know. Those of you who have that view, I mean, do you really believe that? Like, when the president blames Biden for the policy effects that Trump has clearly caused, and again, you can believe that long-term this is good policy, but, I mean, do you really believe that the stock market fluctuations and the negative growth is because of Biden? You don't actually believe that, right? You know the president is telling a falsehood, right?
That's Biden. That's not Trump, because we came in on January. This is the quarterly numbers. This is Biden. And you could even say the next quarter is sort of Biden, because it doesn't just happen on a daily or an hourly basis. But we're turning it around. It's a big ship to turn around.
You turned the ship, sir. You've made policy changes. Massive, wild policy changes that have affected the ship. Now, if you come into office and you do nothing, and you just continue the way things had been going, and then it declines, then you can say, well, that's their fault. But if you come into office and it's going one way, and it was, and then you make big changes and it goes the other way, well, you own that. And again, I'm not disputing that in the long run, this might be fantastic. But you can't fire all the coaches and trade all the players and then claim that the change in your winning status was the previous guy's fault.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. A deal is signed for the U.S. to share profits from the sale of Ukraine's mineral reserves and establish an investment fund for Ukraine reconstruction.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says the agreement signals clearly to Russia that the Trump administration is committed to a peace process centered on a free, sovereign, and prosperous Ukraine.
It's time for this cruel and senseless war to end. The killing must stop.
President Trump has sought an agreement with Ukraine for access to the country's rare earth minerals as a way to be reimbursed for U.S. assistance to Ukraine since Russia's invasion.
Fox's Jared Halpern. Former Vice President Kamala Harris calls President Trump's worldwide tariffs
the greatest man-made economic crisis in modern presidential history.
Spoke in San Francisco at a gala for Emerge America. That's a group that recruits and trains Democratic women to run for office. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 70 degrees right now. Partly cloudy skies this morning in Pensacola. We'll have more with our forecast and Brooke Richardson here in just a few minutes. Two 14-year-olds are charged for that gun that was found at Warrington Preparatory Academy earlier this week.
14-year-old had picked up the gun from his father's safe. It was inside the safe. He took it to school with him. And at one point, he actually, in a threatening manner, showed it to another student. There was a disagreement, and he said, oh, yeah, and then he showed him the firearm.
Sheriff Chip Simmons there. He talked to Channel 3. Now, investigators say another teen was then allegedly involved in helping to hide that gun. Eventually, deputies did find it in a backpack. Both teens are charged with aggravated assault with a firearm, and no shots were fired during that incident. The school does say that all the students were safe at all times. Well, North Escambia reporting that the Century Town Council wants grant funding for three projects: design work for resurfacing on Barnwell Lane, East and West Cottage Streets, and Cedar Street, construction of the Carver Community Center, and a minor home repair program. A grant application will be filed for the Small Cities Community Development Block Grant from the Florida Department of Commerce. Well, Governor DeSantis criticizing the State House. Of course, time now running out on the regular legislative session. He was in Lake County yesterday. DeSantis said he's not expecting a budget before the session ends Friday.
This is not at this point rocket science, guys. You know, we have 6 years of showing how it's done.
The governor is accusing House leaders of turning their backs on conservative progress that he says was made during his administration. He also attacked the recent House investigation into the Hope Florida Foundation's apparent channeling of Medicaid settlement money into donations to groups opposing the marijuana amendment. Now, students across the state may benefit from a new partnership. The governor announcing that the Florida Department of Education and Hope Florida are launching a pilot program which involves placing a Hope Florida liaison at each school in select districts. The liaisons will act as points of contact to provide Hope Florida resources for students, parents, and staff. And Senator Rick Scott calling attention to anti-Semitism and how it's affecting older Jews. Senator Scott, the chairman of the Senate Committee on Aging, at a hearing yesterday, he discussed how older Jewish Americans overwhelmingly recognize the increasing threat of anti-Semitism. Scott cited a study from last year that found 96% of Jewish Americans over 65 recognize anti-Semitism as a problem in the nation. He says elderly Jewish Americans have also faced direct acts of aggression, have been harassed in public, and attacked at protests. It is 5:34 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be seeing a partly cloudy sky day today with a rain chance possible in the morning and afternoon. High today near 82 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. Rain chances jumping up on Friday, especially in the afternoon. 50% chance of some showers and thunderstorms. High near 82. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 68. Rain chances ramping up as we go into your Saturday. 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms through the morning, afternoon, and evening. High near 82. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 65. Stay connected. Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now we've got 70 degrees across the area. Our next news is at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, and dependable. Now getting a look at our pre-opening market report from your Money Now.
I'm Nicole Murray with your Money Now. McDonald's reports first quarter earnings before the bell this morning. Wall Street analysts expect earnings per share of $2.66 and revenue of nearly $6.1 billion, according to LSEG. McDonald's executives will hold an earnings conference call at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman's eye-scanning venture has officially debuted in the U.S. World is opening six U.S. retail locations for eyeball scans. Austin, Atlanta, Los Angeles, Nashville, Miami, and San Francisco. The Orb, a spherical biometric device, scans your face and your iris, then creates and stores a unique iris code for each customer, verifying that you're a human. Chinese online retailers have cut back their spending on Facebook and Instagram ads in reaction to President Trump's trade policy. Meta's finance chief Susan Lee said a portion of that spend has been redirected to other markets, but overall, spending for those advertisers is below the levels prior to April. Futures are sharply higher. That's your Money Now.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
We Care Home Hotline, Woody here.
Woody, I need help with this leaky pipe, and fast.
Probably not what they meant when they said water view, eh? Don't worry, We Care has emergency appointments.
Oh, good. Thanks, Woody.
With highly trained HVAC plumbing and electrical technicians and thousands of positive reviews since 2014, nobody cares like We Care. Let the gnome protect your home. Schedule online at wecareheatandair.com.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Down with the DC talk. Rolling out my big black book.
Good morning, 538 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, I had a chance to talk to Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves, who was out traveling last week. He was at a conference of mayors or League of Cities or Florida leadership, or, you know, he's in all these different organizations, which I think are actually quite good things, you know, for him and for our city. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Yeah, Andrew, thanks for having me.
What were you at last week?
I was at Leadership Florida, our final meeting of the
Leadership Florida
year. So down in Miami, and then annual meeting in June, and all done with it. But yeah, great experience. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I announced yesterday was an economic grant through the National League of Cities. I didn't even know about it until I went to the Leadership Florida meeting in Jacksonville. And then we went from not knowing anything about it to winning it. So to your point, you know, sometimes it's nice to get out there and see best practices and what's going on. And now it has a positive financial impact to the city too.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, you know, diverse sources of information, let alone for, you know, making associations and getting actual, you know, opportunities, because it's funny when you're trying to solve problems and then you're listening to a variety of inputs, you might get a solution in a place you didn't expect it. So I, you know, hanging out with or seeing different environments, I used to always, problems I'd be working on at work, and then I go to hear a sermon, and I'm like, oh, well, that's not related, but it kind of is in my head, so let's fix it, you know? So I love that you go out and look at these things, and in this case, it turns out to be a grant. Speaking of that, I think one of the lesser appreciated stories of the last couple of weeks is this affordable housing grant that you got for working with the Navy base. I mean, it's only $600,000, yeah, but so maybe not big and decisive, but this could be the start of something big, and if it's going to affect affordable housing availability for members of the military, that's huge.
Yeah, and I look at our strategy, whether it's Baptist Hospital, whether it's grants like that, whether it's Malcolm Young property, the partnership with the land trust on three scattered sites, all of those things is we try to collect as many valuable chips as we can, that because we all know that any level of affordability needs subsidy, right? We talk about that all the time. So how does the city build subsidy? Well, it's much, much harder to write a check out of the general fund or write a check out of. So what do? We start a grants office and see if we can get money there. We see what property we have, who are our partners, or we put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into a project like Baptist that will eventually be 38 acres of leverageable opportunity to create affordability in our city. So so we're always, you know, head on a swivel, always looking at what our opportunities are to create subsidy,
right,
which therefore allows to create affordability. Without subsidy, there is no such thing as affordable housing or an affordable housing initiative. So this is yet another example that we're excited about. It's a rare grant that doesn't have a million rules. That's what we like. We can put it into a project. We can buy property with it. And we've got a nice runway to make sure that we have time to make the right decision. So we're very, very excited about it.
Speaking of housing and a project that, you know, you and I have been talking about quite a bit, and of course, you know, even predates you coming into office, but still, the Baptist move has left that campus on the west side of the city of Pensacola vacant and now trying to figure out what to do with it. We finally have bids, we have numbers, we have a timeline. The question, there'd been a bid challenge, but that had to do with one company not having their proper, licensing, and so they were out, and now you're into a second round of negotiations. The question had been raised, why didn't you just go with the cheapest bid? And the answer here is, well, cheapest isn't always best, right?
Exactly. And as I said in my press conference yesterday, I would be very disappointed in my staff if all they ever brought me would be dozens of procurements that we've had since I've been mayor. And they just said, well, Mayor, our work is done here. We had the cheapest. You know, here's the cheapest number, and that's it. Now, sometimes that does make sense. If the rules of engagement are very basic, if it's cutting the grass in this particular park, and it's very clear what the rules are, and every bid has a certain level of credibility, then fine. But a $17 million demolition project that has to not only knock a hospital down, it has to remediate asbestos and other toxins. It's got to drive dozens of trucks a day up and down neighborhood roads. It's got several other complex factors involved in this that have less to do with price. And that doesn't even approach the subject of, is it cheaper? It's cheaper on paper. And what it tells me is if we were to be that simple-minded about it, then the smart thing for every firm to do is to just give us the lowest possible price they can put on paper, and then they can just value add everything against us.
They can change our unit of death later, right?
Exactly. That's what the low, if you actually read the information, which I strongly suggest everybody commenting on it does, then the lowest bid at $10.5 million gives zero contingency, unlike the higher bids, for certain remediation that we know is there. So are we saying it's more fiscally responsible to sign up for an open-ended blank check as it pertains to remediation? Of course not. And so you really have to look at – you have to take apples and oranges, and that's why we have a great staff and a great team that puts this together. And second to that is the conversation about the county and the $2 million from the county. Whether we had gone with number one that, as you just accurately said, was disqualified, there was a new state license that just came into play last year that they did not have. But if regardless of if 14.41 or 13.3 million one, in either case, as it pertains to the county, that still puts us over the 15.9 once you add contingency and once you add an owner's rep, which are just mandatory for this project to work. So the argument that, well, we should pick one cheaper, well, that's a moot point. The only variable there is whether how much money the mayor and the city has to go find in addition to the 15.9 that's been discussed. So, we all want to do what's best for our – with tax dollars, what we all want to do, stretch everybody's dollar as long as possible. But sometimes doing that also means selecting on its face the higher quality bid that's thought through all of the problems and all that to ensure that we protect the taxpayer dollar.
Right.
And so,
the shoes that are half the price but last a third as long are not actually cheaper in the long run, right? That's the problem. This part of the issue, and you made me think about this. I'd never thought about it quite this way, but we know that going with the lowest bidder cost us all kinds of problems when it came to the sailfish sign replacement. Lowest bidder isn't always best. People say Skanska, right. Going with the lowest bidder on the bridge cost us problems. But in a way I'd never thought of before that, who knows, but that maybe their decision not to, move the barges out of the way was born by the fact that they had made a similar decision recently and just didn't want to incur the cost because they were starting to run up against their margins. Like, that's one of the problems with going with the lowest bidder is you create weird incentives for people to do the wrong thing sometimes, and all of that has to be taken into account. I did want to ask you a question, though, just because it had come up.
Yeah.
The issue of concrete crushing on-site versus at a remote location, it will not be happening on site at Baptist. Is that your goal?
Absolutely. Now, Okay. Now the original winning bidder, Sessler, had already priced that. And so yet again, another example of, yes, that their price may have been a little higher, but there were apples and there were oranges.
Yeah.
And so I certainly expect in my negotiation with North Star, and I don't think we'll be a surprise to them, that that's what we're going to be looking to do. And whether that's can be folded into the costs or not. But I think that's a vital, vital piece of this because this is going to be a long project and we have to respect the neighbors as best that we can. So sometimes when you think that just pick the cheapest means we crush rock 24 hours a day, for example, on site, would that be better for our community? Those are the things that we're absolutely going to be prioritizing. I can't say where that's going to go. Because we'll have to negotiate through with that. But that is absolutely my intention right now is to be able to crush that offsite and then have it trucked offsite, and then crushed offsite.
And by the way, this is a small note, but I actually appreciate in the meeting on Thursday night when you and Erica Garancagnolo both kind of were reluctant to say things that you could have said to satisfy the, transparency question, but would have actually adversely affected your ability to negotiate and make decisions. So, I always like it when people take the harder road, even though it makes them maybe look bad, because I don't think it makes you look bad. I think it makes you look smart. So I actually appreciate that. A related question, just because I know the funding for a lot of the demolition at Baptist is coming from the state and, having to make progress in order to show good faith that you deserve to keep that money. When we had Alex Andrade on the show on Friday, I had asked him the question of, does all the bickering, fighting, disagreement, whatever, between him and the governor or Michelle Salzman and the governor, does that jeopardize any of the funding proposals that he's trying to get for our area? And he said he absolutely believes the governor is going to veto his funding request for this area. The question is then whether the House and the Senate are going to override those vetoes. Are you worried about any of that, either with the Baptist funding, which has already been promised, or with ongoing projects that the city's looking to benefit from the state with. Is that an issue for you right now?
You know, I think a big part of this job and Representative Andrade's job and all of ours is to be reading tea leaves, right? Of like, you know, what happens, you know, we pull this lever and then what happens and what the consequences are, and at least whether we like them or not, you know, being mindful of those. So certainly, you know, we keep an eye on any of those types of things at the state level, at the federal level. You know, I think it's important to point out what gets lost in the negotiating through the media phase of this between Commissioner Kohler and myself about what we should do with the bid at Bathurst. More so, I think on the state side, what I believe was important was that we have a donation agreement that is agreed upon and I believe signed by Bathurst waiting on us right now that's ready to go, which means we are committed to this project.
Right.
And I know that was really the important barometer from the state perspective. Not that they don't want it to see it all the way done, and certainly we do too. We're all motivated for that. You know, what's getting lost in this is we do have an agreement. We are committed to this project. What is now taking the headlines is $2 million of the $16 million, and really over 20 if you include our grant funding, that's already committed to this. So this is a very small sliver in the grand scheme of things. But it's just the final step to be able to get it done. So, of course, we're mindful of those things. You know, I don't believe any of our state funding requests got through anyway. I guess, you know, we don't have as much to worry about from that perspective this session.
When you get told no in the first place, you don't have to worry about losing it. I guess that's unfortunately.
So we don't have as much to worry about this session. And, you know, obviously Senator Brockton, everybody was great to us the last couple of years. That happens sometimes. And, you know, I would sure, you know, Representative Andrade could speak better to this than me, but I certainly would expect next year is not going to be any more friendly up there in Tallahassee, it doesn't feel like. So obviously we're looking at this as a multi-year, you know, kind of situation, whatever, for better or for worse. So we just do what we can and offer what we can and, you know, try to build relationships hang on tight, I guess.
You know, one of the things that we're not going to have too much time to talk about it, but I just want to give you kudos. I had said, seeking out ECUA as helping you with the connectivity on the Portland Loos to save money for everybody, great. Bringing a restroom facility to Veterans Memorial Park, which seems like it's on the cusp of actually happening finally, unrelated to the other project, great. I mean, these are good things that are happening. The Sun Trail, you know, having a multi-use path basically eventually going to connect Bayou Chico all the way to the Chappie James Bridge. I mean, great. Like, these are all, there's some really, really good things going on. And sometimes it gets lost a little bit in the, you know, the conversation about this or that sort of controversial issue. So, I just wanted to give you a little bit of credit for some of that because it's, you know, things seem to be progressing. We always like to end with a little bit of a lightning round, quick questions. So first question for DC Reeves, do you set any of your clocks fast? If so, by how much?
I used to trying to get up for school, but no, I don't, man. I try to be as accurate as possible as the mayor of your city, so I stick them exactly where they should be. And, you know, Apple iPhones has changed that the game for us, you know, more than when we were growing up, you know.
Do you, when you fill the dishwasher, do you do the dishwasher or does your girlfriend do the dishwasher? Because it's not fair to ask you if she does the work.
Well, if she's listening, she does it all the time. If she's not, then it's about 50-50.
Okay. When you're filling cups into the top level, do the cups go between the pegs or on the pegs?
Depends on if they're plastic or glass, Andrew. I'm going to say
– so wishy-washy.
I used to put them on. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, good one. I would say I used to be back in my younger – more immature days, I used to put them on the peg, and now I've put them between if it's appropriate.
Okay, so you've matured. I appreciate that. And then the last question, and I'm actually really curious about this because you use your cell phone a lot. Does your cell phone ever die? And at what point are you actually worried about battery life for your cell phone? Like, what's the number where you start to get a little concerned?
It depends on how my day went. If it was a long day, then I just let it die. but no, I Probably about when I get under 5%, then I feel like I've got to take action.
So that's a very low threat. You know, I mean, that's a, like you'd let it go a long way before you're really worried.
Yeah, but you know, I carry, you know, especially since this job started, I carry those chargers everywhere, the portable ones. I mean,
okay.
It's hard for me to not, you know, back myself into a charger somewhere. So again, you know, as your mayor, you know, I try to be online for you as much as possible. So yeah, I can't think of I haven't had a bad scenario lately where I've you know, lost all the juice.
All right, your fanny pack is full of charging ports. All right, I appreciate that.
That's right.
DC Reeves, Mayor of Pensacola, always a pleasure, sir. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Most definitely. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Pensacola Little Theater is proud to present Trail to Oregon, May 2nd to 11th, a lively and humorous musical that follows the misadventures of a quirky pioneer family as they journey westward along the Oregon Trail in the 19th century. Led by the bumbling but well-meaning father, the family encounters a series of obstacles and colorful characters along the way, including bandits, buffalo stampedes, and the dreaded dysentery. Secure your tickets for this show online at PensacolaLittleTheater.com or at the PLT box office. This show contains mature themes and language.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers. On the News Radio Garden Line, sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Hall's Hardware in Milton.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
And I said, I don't care if they lay me off either, because I told Bill that if they move my desk one more time, then I'm quitting. I'm going to quit.
Good morning, 5:56 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Should I read anything into the fact that the guy who owns a stapler in Office Space, his name is Milton?
I forgot about that.
I know. I never thought about it before just this second. Nah, it doesn't mean anything. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. Republicans advancing legislation supporting President Trump's immigration policies. The House Judiciary Committee approving a measure along party lines yesterday that would fund the deportation of 1 million migrants each year. That bill also includes $45 billion to detain 100,000 migrants.
Well, you said it wrong. They're going to deport how many?
What?
I'll say it.
1 million
immigrants. Go on.
Oh, let's see here. The NBA postseason rolls on. The Timberwolves locked up their spot in the Western Conference semifinals with a 103-96 victory over the Lakers in Game 5 in Los Angeles last night. The Rockets also avoided elimination in a Game 5 win over the Warriors in Houston. And the Israelis... I had to flip
I'm
over
waiting.
The building the suspense. The Israeli wildfires are spreading near Jerusalem. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declared a national emergency yesterday. He's warning that the wildfires could reach Jerusalem. Emergency officials say the west of the city are the worst brush fires. The fires on the west of the city are the worst in years for the nation.
I'm trying to remember whether the Mount of Olives is on the west side or the east side, and all of a sudden I can't. I think it's on the east side, but I cannot remember. God, that would be terrible to lose all the olive trees up there. Beautiful. That's where Jesus prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane and, you know, before going into the crucifixion. David, thank you so much for the update. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3. The Senate The Senate considered the nominations of the, you know, PSC Board of Trustees and the UWF Board of Trustees.
We'll now move to the appointments tab, senators, and consider executive appointments. Senator of the 1st District, President Gates, you are recognized to explain the report.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. The report contains the names of 189 appointees who have been appointed by the governor to various state, regional, and local offices, boards, and commissions. As required by Rule 12.7, the Committee on Ethics and Elections conducted an inquiry concerning the qualifications, experience, and general suitability of each appointee for appointment to their particular office.
So they considered this big list. They pulled two names off the list that did not have anything to do with us. They were from other counties. We got a lot of public input on the list, and it was basically a formality because he said we submit the entire slate, the report, to the Senate. The Senate voted on it. It was unanimous, and that's it. The remaining survivors of the Board of Trustees nominees by Governor DeSantis or the Board of Governors are now appointed. And, you know, that includes, and of course, at PSC also, without Joel Rudman on that list. So that means that you have Paul Bailey, Rebecca Matthews, Rachel Moya, Ashley Ross, and Chris Young all got appointed to PSC. And then Ed Fleming and Andy Hobbs and Zach Smith, I forget his last name, all got appointed to the Pensacola State College. So, good. We're all done here for now.